Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Troubled writer Paul Theroux's latest novel, The Lower River, is about a former Peace Corps volunteer who returns to Malawi years later and finds the village he left much changed. Almost 50 years ago, Paul Theroux lived in the small Central African nation of Malawi. Theroux was there for 4 years teaching English as a Peace Corps volunteer. The Lower River is the story of Ellis Hawk, also a former Peace Corps volunteer. He longs to return to the village where he volunteered decades earlier, hoping to revisit a different, better chapter of his life. Paul Theroux is the author of many highly acclaimed books. His novels include A Dead Hand and The Mosquito Coast, and his renowned travel books include Ghost Train to the Eastern Star and Dark Star Safari. It's a great pleasure to welcome Paul Theroux to The Book Show.
It's my pleasure, Joe.
What brought you back to, you personally, back to Malawi and back to Africa after almost 50 years?
If you're speaking in a literary sense, I never really left it. I joined the Peace Corps in 1963, and I went to Malawi, what it was called Nyasaland then, almost 50 years ago. I was a teacher in the southern region, in a place called Limbe, not the Lower River region. And then every 3 or 4 years, I went back to Malawi. I went back to Africa. And so over the years, I've continued to go back. I never really left it. In a fictional sense, I've written about it a lot, both in fiction and nonfiction. And then in 2001, I took a major trip from Cairo to Cape Town, overland. That's quite a daunting thing because, finding buses, trains, cars, boats, whatever, it took a long time to go from north to south. And I stopped by Malawi, and I went back to my Peace Corps school then. Over the years, I'd noticed changes in the country, but that was a very disillusioning experience, seeing the school, seeing the country, and then I continued on to Cape Town, and the last trip I took, which was late last year, I was in Southern Africa, in Namibia and Angola. So it's part of my Africa, being there, working there, writing about it is really a major part of my life.
For this character, for Ellis Hawk, he is returning to Malawi years later. And how much of what he feels in those changes are changes that you felt?
Well, I noticed the changes a lot. I mean, when you go back, it's like there's a great novel by George Orwell called Coming Up for Air, where the main character, Tubby Bowling, wins a lottery, small lottery prize, and goes back to his hometown and finds it much changed. That's sort of the experience that anyone feels going home and finding, the old neighborhood, the friends and everything, people and things change. So Ellis Hawk's reactions in the Lower River are, to a large extent, mine. But it's also a story of captivity. I think it's mainly a story of captivity, not of disillusionment. It's a story of a man who goes to a place with good intentions and says, my life has changed. I want to do something good. I want to go back to the only place that I was really happy, and of course, and spend some time there, and feel a sense of the same sense of vitality that I had before, and maybe I can regain that because my wife's left me, my child doesn't like me, my business has folded. I want to go back, and go back to this place that that was my Eden. And where I, felt expelled from Eden, long ago, and I'm going to return. And then they don't let him go. He gives money out, and they say, no, we want you to stay. Mm. And furthermore, not only do we want you to stay, we forbid you to go. You are ours now. So I see it as a story of captivity rather than disillusionment.
It does seem that he finds a very different place than the one he left, an almost haunted place.
That's true, but I mean that's true of a lot of Africa. It didn't work out. A lot of African efforts, let's say, or efforts on behalf of NGOs or aid agencies didn't work out quite the way they were supposed to. A lot of aid is given to dictators. It's given to people who are desperate, people who misuse the funds. A lot of people steal it. A lot of it, sometimes it's not enough. And sometimes money is not what they need. Sometimes it's something else that they need. So it's, you know, things fall apart, in a famous phrase. But I think that, Malawi is almost a classic case of this happening, because Malawi, when I was there, was a country of just 1 million people, maybe 1.5 million. And now it's a country of 13 million people, 1 million of whom are orphans. Just so, that's not good. And what do you do when that's the case? What do you do when the government is a dictatorship or a tyranny? Or last year they shot 19 students. I mean, the man who did it, the president, is now dead. I mean, he had a heart attack, and so they have someone else taking over. But it was a homophobic, oppressive government. There's only been 3 people in power since 1964 in Malawi. So they've had a succession of tyrants, I think. And that's a disillusioning thing. You know, you go back and you find out, oh my God, the same man's in power. You know, nothing's changed. Things are slightly worse. You know, I don't think of it as a political book. This novel, The Lower River, is a book about a man who, you know, is making a sentimental journey, and it goes wrong.
This is something that you talk about, the feeling of captivity, of being held captive, and you tell a story of going to Africa and saying, okay, I'm going to go, I'll have a drink, and then I'll leave in the morning, and this just sort of being protracted, and every time you leave, you find that you can't.
Yes, this is sort of a nightmare for me. It actually happened to me in around Christmas 1964. I was in Zambia having a drink and went to a village. A couple said, come to our village, and we went that night, and the next morning I wanted to leave, and they wouldn't let me. They said, no, it's Boxing Day. I'd never heard that expression before, Boxing Day, Boxing Day. And it's a holiday. So we went, and we all got drunk. And then the next day, with a terrible hangover, I said, well, now I really am leaving. And they said, no, we don't want you to leave. Furthermore, we're going to get drunk again, and you're going to pay. So that day went by, and then another day went by, and I finally got away, but with a ruse, because they didn't want me to leave, and I needed, you know, it's kind of an elaborate ruse, and I got away, and I thought, this is a nightmare. I'm a traveler because I like to have a sense of freedom, to go where I want to go, the liberating sense of travel. You don't go to a place where people are going to hold you captive, and you think, my God, you know, well, it's like the picnic that goes wrong, you know, turns into Picnic at Hanging Rock or something. So this is the ultimate of that, which is, for Ellis Hawke, and he goes with good intentions, and they say, no, we're not going to let you leave, but we're going to make you a chief. You're going to be the chief, so you can be our chief. And by the way, we need some more money. So that's, you know, it's happened to me, but to me, it's a sort of a parable of what happens to a lot of people in life, or, you know, certainly in with good intentions in Africa and elsewhere.
The other thing that struck me is, as you said, going with good intentions, that we are often filled with this nostalgia, and it so seems that Ellis wanted these people to be the people that he knew 50 years before.
Yeah, that's true. And they were also, they're the grandchildren of the people that he knew, and they're different, you know. I mean, that's kind of interesting. And they're young. I mean, he thinks, you know, that people think that development is straight north, that it's, you know, you go there and you're a teacher and there's a school, and next year you're going to have more students and more teachers and it's more books and everything's going to be fine. You don't think next year it's going to be downhill, or that it is downhill. But for a lot of places, not just Africa, but a lot of places, it's downhill. I mean, I live in Hawaii. Our local library can't buy books. They've talked about closing. Our local post office might close. There's a hospital here that might close. You don't think, well, this is Hawaii. We have money and prosperity and whatnot. Why is this happening? And you know, it's a very disillusioning thing to think that things are going wrong. But that's the subject. I mean, if you're a writer, this is a great thing. It's something to write about, because writing about a static society isn't much fun. Writing about change, and particularly dramatic change, can animate your imagination.
So for Ellis, there is this Malawi that he remembers, and I guess it's a selective memory. Have you had that feeling in your travels of returning to a place and finding it very, very different than what you remembered it to be?
The short answer is all places, all travel, all return journeys present you with different circumstances. In 1973, I took off on a trip that became my travel book, The Great Railway Bazaar. Mm. In 2007, I took the same trip again, just to see what was different and the same or whatever, to see the changes. So I took the same trip. I went from London to Paris, Paris to Istanbul, through Turkey. I couldn't go to Iran, so I went north. I went to Azerbaijan and through Turkmenistan, then down to India. Everything had changed. Everything had changed. I had changed. Probably that was the greatest or the biggest change was me. But instead of taking the ferry, London to Paris, I went through the Channel Tunnel. I mean, there's a novelty for you. Turkmenistan, which was impossible to visit when I was there, I went to. I had gone through Iran and Afghanistan before. It was impossible. I couldn't go to Iran, and Afghanistan's at war. I couldn't do that. So you say, have I had this experience? I think my whole life, and many people can say this, that the return journeys they've taken have been not disappointing, but illuminating in that they're filled with change. I went to Vietnam in 1974. And travel. There was shooting, and they were blowing up oil depots, and it was a kind of a haunted period in 1974 because our troops had withdrawn. Well, I went back, you know, a few years ago, and Vietnam is a prosperous, flourishing place with very few people talk about the war, and they're very forgiving too. So, what's different between, you know, war and then peace and prosperity? So I think for a writer, this is a golden moment to see dramatic change.
Paul Theroux is the author of the new novel, The Lower River, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You returned to your Peace Corps school. What was that experience like?
I went back. In 2001, I took a trip from Cairo to Cape Town, and I stopped by. Well, and the school was much changed. Here's an interesting thing. I mean, we had gone as Peace Corps volunteers in 1964 and 5 to start new schools and to train teachers. 40 years later, the Peace Corps is there, still training teachers. Now, 50 years later, we're still training teachers. When people question my views on aid, I always mention this interesting fact, which is that in 50 years, they still haven't trained teachers to take over the schools. And this is what's wrong with aid, in my view, that it's there's no accountability, and people don't share the responsibility for it. So when I went back to the school was very badly run, very badly staffed, very badly funded. And although a lot of money had been given to the government to run the school, it hadn't trickled down to buying books or to paying teachers. So I found it much changed, very seedy, broken windows. And they said, and then grass is growing. And they said, the government doesn't give us money. And I said, well, I understand that. But why don't you get some students I'll give you a broom, sweep the floor, fix the windows, cut the grass. That doesn't take money. And they're just kind of looking, shrugging, well, you know, things are tough. And I thought, well, the problem isn't so much lack of money as lack of willpower. And that's another thing that had obviously been a disconnect with the aid. But then they were my dream. My dream was for the school to be great and for to train teachers and have students. Maybe it wasn't their dream. Maybe they wanted to do something else. Clearly, they wanted to do something else because the school hadn't worked out. If you go to the average schoolroom in Malawi, or I was just in Angola and I asked this question, what would you like to do with your life? Where would you like to go? All the hands go up and they say, we want to go to America. We want to leave. I want to leave Malawi. We want to leave Angola. We want to go away. And so that was not the case 40 years ago, but it is the case now.
Was it that experience of returning to that school that's kind of triggered this story for you?
What triggered the story is this, the nightmare, or, you know, the recurring, nightmare is putting a bit strongly, but the anxiety of going to a place and not being able to leave. I have this experience every now and then as a traveler in Africa and elsewhere, that you get to a place and you say, well, here I am, now what? And they say, how do I get out of here? And they say, either, you know, you can't get there from here, or there might be a bus in a week, or there might be, you know, something, or maybe, you know, maybe there's a truck, but we don't know when it's coming. And you think, well, okay, I'm stuck. And getting stuck, and then maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe there's a storm. Maybe the road washes out, so you're stuck and you stay. So it's that sense of captivity. What informed it was, of course, the changes in Africa, AIDS, HIV, starvation or hunger, bad government, bad mismanagement, being out of touch, all of those. But also the sense of going to a place with the best of intentions and then being captive. And captivity, for a traveler, captivity is sort of the worst thing that can happen, because the traveler thinks of himself or herself as someone who can move at will. You know, get up in the morning, travel light, get the bus, go. Just go. Go to a different place. Try that one and keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. But when you get to a place, as Ellis Hawke in the Lower River, he's in the Lower River. He cannot leave. And so he has to find out, you know, how to get out. He has to sort of solve it. It becomes, I suppose, this visceral experience of needing to escape. And so it's probably more about that. I mean, I wanted people just to turn pages, to read it as a book, that, and to think, well, what next? What's going to happen to this guy? And then afterwards you think, well, what is this all about? Is it about aid? Is it about the human condition? Is it existential? Is it sort of Paul Bowles meditation on, you know, dissolution? You know, what is it? But that would come later.
It does seem, at least for me, there was this feeling of the primal fear that I have upon traveling, that things will not go well and that I will not be able to return home, that I won't be able to get back to what I left. And that can be for a simple trip or a more complex one. And it seems to be a fairly, when you ask people about traveling, it's a fear that many people have of travel.
It's probably more of a fear of a tourist than a traveler. That the fear of the tourist is that they can't get back to work on Monday, because the tourist is under a time constraint. It's nothing against tourists, but the tourist has a week or 10 days, and they have to be back to work. The traveler doesn't have a job. I mean, classically, the traveler is just a bum, a wanderer, a vagabond, who's going just, you know, pillar to post, make the best of it, and shambling and rambling along. And so that's the sort of person I am. You just grin like a dog and wander aimlessly around the town and try to go. But I think the big anxiety for the tourists is that they'll miss the plane. They won't get back home. For a traveler, it's slightly different. I mean, it's more open ended. So a traveler can be delayed. Usually, is delayed. I mean, the whole point about traveling is you're not quite sure where you're going or where you've been. But you make the best of it. And then the worst of it, of course, is getting stuck or getting sick. And sometimes that happens. You come down with something terrible, or maybe it's not terrible. Maybe you're just ill and you have to hunker down. And that's happened to me a number of times. And You can't leave and get well, go home and go to a hospital. You just check into a hotel or whatever it is. You stay in a place until you feel better. And if you don't have to be someplace on Monday, then you can spend the next week getting well, and then you move on. I that's a nice part of travel, that you have this the latitude to do it. It's different, though, when someone sticks a gun in your face or wags his finger at you and says, you cannot leave. You can't go. You are ours now. You belong to us. You can't go home. This is your home. And you say, no, surely not. I have to go. No. We'll make you a chief. You stay. So, you know, that's tough.
What do you think it is about you and being a writer and being a travel writer that you knew that you wanted to be, as you say, a bum, a vagabond, to go from place to pillar to post and see what was out there?
I basically wanted to leave home. I come from a large family, a family of 7 children, and anyone who's listening to this, who comes from a large family, can relate to it. It's not one big happy family in the bosom of a house. It's, you know, you need space. You need to verify who you are, what you want to do. You don't, when you're with, in a big family, it's there's great confusion about who you are and what you're going to do. And what you really want is elbow room. You're not to share everything, share the bathroom, share the bedroom, share, you know, the table. You need to go and the short answer to your question is I wanted to leave home and I wanted to go far away and I wanted to find out who I am and what I want to do. And the word transformation was not in my vocabulary, but I wanted obviously to transform myself. I wanted to become someone, something. And I didn't know whether I thought I might go to medical school, and I did. I was a pre-med student. But then I thought, well, right, that's the thing. You know, I mean, writing and traveling are quite compatible, and they're quite similar too, because both are very liberating activities. And that's in a word how it happened. I mean, my last book, the book that came out last year, is called The Tao of Travel, or The Tao of Travel. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned in that, I mean, how travelers through history, it's quotations, it's a personal anthology, but how through history, travelers are in search of transformation. They're trying out. They're curious about the world, and many of them, and many of the best ones, are writers. The great travel book, the great travelers produce the great travel books, and they're always stories of looking for something. Maybe they don't find the thing that they're looking for, but they are changed by the experience. And this is also why when someone goes to Africa for a week and meets the head of state and gives them money or builds a school and then goes away, they're kind of missing the point. You have to go and immerse yourself in a culture, learn a language, stay there, work humbly, and then you find out what it's like. And you have, as I did, I had something to write about.
Obviously, having so much to write about, it could be your story or it could be fiction. You have dabbled, obviously, in both. There are freedoms that come with fiction, I assume.
Well, yes, but there's also there's this a traveler or a novelist has that in common, which is the traveler is not quite sure where he or she is going, and a fiction writer is often working toward conclusions of which he or she is unaware. So, you know, you don't quite know how it's all going to end. Maybe it's hidden from you. The end of the trip, the end of the book. And with a travel book, it's different. You know how it's going to end. But right. with fiction, working in the imagination, you're not quite sure how. And that's a great thing. But that's the thing that stimulates the mind. How is this all going to end? Where am I going with this book? Where am I going with this trip? And, you know, if you have the time, luckily, I have it. I don't have a job. I haven't had a job since 1971, so I can say that I have the luxury, I suppose you could say, to investigate this on my own. Fortunately, I don't have someone waiting for me, and you know, a boss or someone breathing down my neck. I can just take the risk myself.
Well, the name of the novel is The Lower River, Paul Theroux's latest novel. It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Paul Theroux, a great pleasure to have you on the book show this week, and I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Joe.
The name again of the book is The Lower River, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org.
Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.